Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Mark Taylor welcoming you to Beyond the Standard, the monthly online interview program sponsored by Christian Standard. Today's discussion promises some practical strategies plus new ways of thinking about a subject that's central to the fabric of everyday ministry. We're talking about volunteers, how to find them, and most important, how to keep them. To help us with these problems, we're talking with two local church ministry leaders with years of experience launching volunteers into meaningful ministry. Each of them wrote in the September issue of Christian Standard. You can find their articles by downloading that issue digitally via the Christian Standard app, available from the App Store, Google Play, or apps for Kindle. If you haven't read what they wrote there, we're sure you'll want to after listening to this discussion. We also want to remind live listeners that they can ask their questions via the chat line at the Blog Talk Radio website. Please just type in your questions there, and I'll do my best to get your questions before our guests, before our hour is up. So let's get to it. Let's begin with an understanding of the roles our two volunteers play or have played with volunteers in the local church. Our first guest is Melissa Sandell. Melissa, you serve as Director of Ministries with Westside Christian Church in Springfield, Illinois. Director of Ministry sounds like it's all about volunteers. Do I have that right?
You know, Mark, I have had several roles here at Westside over the years. I began as the small groups director, and during that time, I oversaw a couple hundred volunteers. And over the last 7 or 8 years, I have transitioned into an executive pastor role. So now I primarily spend my time coaching our staff on how to recruit and lead volunteers and developing a healthy volunteer culture for our church at large.
That's very exciting and very helpful to our discussion. You've kind of looked at it from both ways, how to manage those volunteers themselves and then how to help others manage them. I'm looking forward to what you're going to bring to the table. Susan Lawrence is our second guest. Susan, you've coordinated women's ministries and small groups ministry and Christian education for a local church. Tell us about all of that and how volunteers played into that experience for you.
Well, I really have primarily been a volunteer leader. I have transitioned in and out of paid staff positions over the years, but for the most part have led from a volunteer unpaid position, but also led those volunteers. And it really started at my local church when my husband and I and family moved churches, and we were super burned out from volunteering in the wrong ways and for the wrong reasons at another church. And so we had asked for a short reprieve before we really jumped in. And there was a call from the senior minister one Sunday to help with VBS. And I jumped back in again and started learning about volunteering, leading it, as well as serving from a healthy perspective, which I think is essential for our churches and ministries.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. It is certainly true that sometimes volunteers are recruiting and training volunteers. And so I think we're going to have a rich discussion today because of the various discussions that are the various perspectives and experiences that you ladies have behind you. Let's start with recruiting. We could do a whole hour on how to recruit volunteers, and I don't think that's really what our main focus is going to be, and yet sometimes how you recruit them does really affect how and whether you can keep them. Susan, let's just start with you. What have you learned about how to recruit volunteers, either from the way you've been recruited or the way you've done the recruiting yourself? What are some tips for recruiting that occur to you to get us started in this discussion?
I think probably the biggest thing to me that I've probably learned the hard way is it's a process. It's not a one-time toss an invitation out there or toss even a demand. You know, we have to have this many volunteers. That a lot of it is about building relationships, informing people, educating them, letting them mature in their own time, letting God challenge and convict and really lead them personally, and inviting them on that process.
Well, that's very interesting. It's a cinch that it's easier to talk to somebody about serving when you know them, when you have a relationship with them. And yet sometimes the need for volunteers is larger than the number of relationships that I can have in the church. When you had 200 volunteers in your small group ministry, Melissa, I'm guessing you didn't have a relationship with each of them, or maybe you did. I don't know. How do you respond to that?
Sure. As your volunteer number grows in a church, it's impossible for one volunteer leader to know and care for and even equip all of those people themselves. And that's where a multi-tiered leadership structure has to come into place. So during my time as a small group director, I had a dozen or so coaches who served under my leadership, and they each had five or six small group leaders that they were pouring into. And that type of structure is helpful no matter what type of ministry that you lead, because then you're in the trenches with volunteer leaders who really own the vision and who are shoulder tapping and recruiting people. You've got more help, you've got more relationships, and you're better able to pour into people right where they're at.
Right. So somebody has a relationship with a person that you're recruiting. It just may not be you. I was thinking of how to stimulate this discussion, and I was thinking that sort of a fake interview question is, is it easier to recruit volunteers, or is it easier to keep them? Or is it, maybe put it the other way, is it more difficult to find them, or is it more difficult to keep them? And I don't know if that's sort of a fake question, or if either one of you ladies has a response to that.
Well, Mark, that's kind of like asking which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Both are equally important. It's hard to know which one fuels the other, because really they fuel each other. But I think when you do a great job of getting the volunteers that you need, you find people who are wired to do what you're asking them to do, and you cast the vision, you're not just filling holes, but you're selling the why and then selling the what. When you're explaining to them how their role fits into the larger picture of what your church is trying to accomplish, when you onboard them well and then you care for them and you equip them over the long haul, they then become great recruiters for you, and they're able to, like I mentioned earlier, shoulder tap other people. And so it becomes kind of this flywheel that gets turning. But if you recruit and you onboard well and then you equip well, you find a lot of momentum growing in your ministry area.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about my fake question, Susan?
I agree with Melissa. I think it's really about getting that momentum going and really equipping people to know when a good yes is necessary and when a good no is essential. And I think the more that we, so many times we see volunteering as a yes, that it's always, yes, I can do this. Yes, I'm available. Yes, I'm willing. Yes, I'm gifted. But equally as important is equipping them to know what to say no to and how to say no to things, because it's really the important no's that end up becoming the essential yeses. And so, you know, once you really get that going and constantly pouring into them and equipping them and inviting them to change and grow and invest in others and shift their focus, if God is leading them to set something aside and pick something else up, whether it's an increased leadership level or it's a shift over into a different type of ministry but using some of the same gifts, and just really that constant attention to and equipping people to listen to God's voice, follow him, talk to others, invest in others, and let others invest into them as well.
I think Susan makes a great point there. Sometimes as ministry leaders, we get so focused on filling the needs that we have in our ministry area that we push people to say yes, and we try to persuade them to say yes. And while that is certainly a role that we must play, we also have to be very discerning that we don't allow people to say yes when they really should be saying no. Perhaps your ministry area isn't the best fit where they can make the greatest contribution, or maybe their life stage just doesn't allow them to invest all that's needed in the area that you're asking them into. Well, they're only going to get frustrated and disappointed, and you as a ministry leader are setting yourself up to be disappointed when you bring somebody in to the fold that really isn't ready to serve in that way or doesn't have the capacity or time to serve in that way. And so part of recruiting is helping people
connect with roles that are the right fit for them and not just pushing for a yes because you have needs that need to be met.
But it's so easy when you're confronted with a huge list of vacant holes to get into a panic and a desperate search to fill those. Have either of you ever felt that way, and how have you gotten yourself out of that panic filling a hole syndrome?
Well, I have never felt panicked in my life of ministry. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, we've all had those moments where it's, I have no idea how I'm going to solve this problem right now. And sometimes it is a quick fix. I mean, let's just be honest. Sometimes you just grab a warm body and you say, can you please do this for me for the next hour? But that's not the long-term fix. I think there's a difference between being in panic mode and needing to fill a spot quickly and then reflecting on that and how am I going to actually move forward so that things like this don't happen on a regular basis. And just making sure that whoever that warm body is, that you put them into that position, that you make sure that you encourage them afterward and release them. If that's not, and maybe that was actually God moving and placing them in a situation where they had to kind of jump in and be forced to do it, and they realize, oh, maybe this is really where I'm supposed to be. I don't think that happens a lot. I think for the most part, it's they were willing to do it, and you're very thankful, and sometime between now and next week or next month or whenever you need to fill that slot again, as a leader, we're going to be really intentional and figure out how we're going to pour into people in the meantime.
And there's a difference between managing and leading. You know, managing is dealing with today, and leading is preparing for tomorrow today. And there are times when, like Susan mentioned, you just need to fill the roles that you have today because you need to get through this Sunday. But that doesn't mean that there's not a plan in place and you're not thinking ahead about how you can recruit people over the long haul to fill larger roles that keep you from being frantic all the time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that then. How do... Melissa, tell us a little bit about how you've planned for recruiting, because it's easy simply to, open a new ministry or begin the new school year, and so we're looking at all of our Sunday school teachers again or something like that, and just to say, man, how many holes we got? Okay, who can we get to fill them? Which is managing, I think. So. Can you give us any strategies beyond just you've got to do it, you've got to plan ahead for leading in such a way so that recruiting happens more naturally and more successfully?
I've seen a bunch of churches do this right, and I don't think there's one right way to do it. But here at Westside, we have found that the calendar year is a little different than the ministry year. There are certain times when people just naturally get into a flow and a rhythm or thinking about engaging in commitments and are more apt to say yes because there's just a natural break in their time of year where they're thinking about these things. So, for example, when you're coming into a new school year, people are thinking about, you know, commitments and rhythms and things like that. So we are always planning for the new school year to be a time where we are onboarding volunteers. Another just kind of natural time to do that is usually around the new year or right before Easter. And so at Westside, we just look at the ministry year, which for us runs fall through the following spring and summer, and we ask ourselves, where are there strategic opportunities where we can get our entire church thinking about how God's going to use them at our church in the coming year? And sometimes that comes in the form of a message preached on Sunday morning, followed by an opportunity for people to explore the different volunteer opportunities available. And when there's that kind of alignment and church-wide focus, you just kind of get a buzz. People start thinking about it because they're hearing it everywhere they go. They're hearing it from maybe the senior minister on Sunday morning, but they're also hearing about it from other staff members or they're hearing about it from other volunteer leaders. Everybody's thinking volunteers and trying to find a place to serve. And so when you know that you're trying to gear up and fill a bunch of roles or gear up for the next year, position yourself to be successful for the next ministry year, you plan a couple months in advance, and you try to figure out ways where you can get everybody talking and thinking in the same way and giving them opportunities to connect or maybe even test drive a volunteer opportunity. We know that a lot of times our larger opportunities are so big that when people say, man, you're asking me to volunteer, you know, once a month for 12 months, I don't know if I'm going to be in town then. I don't know how this is going to work in my schedule. Or if you're asking for an every week role for a year, that is a long time to commit, and that sometimes puts some fear in people. We try to find first serve opportunities so that people can maybe get a taste of what it's like to serve in that ministry area and then decide if they want to make a longer term commitment. So I think bite-sizing volunteer opportunities and then planning for a church-wide initiative in order to onboard a bunch of volunteers at once, both of those are ways that we have found to be very fruitful in recruiting volunteers and planning ahead.
And for either one of you, do you settle for the public announcement, the church paper announcement, the preacher announcement, we really need a lot of help with VBS this year, please contact Melissa at this email address if you can help with VBS. Is that your approach, or are you unsatisfied with that kind of an approach?
Really, that's not enough. Those kind of banner announcements plant seeds in people's minds, and they help people become familiar with the needs. But that really has to be coupled with shoulder tapping, going to somebody and saying, hey, I've noticed that you have this set of skills, or I've noticed that you have a child in our children's ministry, or I've noticed you've got a passion for this type of thing. Would you consider joining our team? And really, that shoulder tapping is more successful when the seeds have been planted by announcements. But neither can really exist without the other. It's both and.
Okay, that's good. What about you, Susan? You got any perspective on that?
I completely agree with that. I think that the personal invitation is incredibly powerful. And we need to continue to put things in the bulletin, speak them from the pulpit, put them on the website, because people need to hear something multiple times before they'll respond. But they'll respond most strongly to someone saying, hey, have you ever thought of doing this? Or I see this in you. Can I connect you with so-and-so? And I think one of the things, and Melissa alluded to this earlier, about really using those existing volunteers to help keep the momentum of volunteer building going, I think sometimes they are the strongest people to invite others into an area of ministry because they're invested in that area of ministry. They're passionate about it. They know the ins and outs. They know the great things about serving in that ministry. They also know the things that can really get them down. And those are equally as important to know because we don't want to have people serving in an area that the one difficult thing about it is something that they're very sensitive to and will actually end up not just maybe physically and emotionally negatively impacting them, but spiritually as well. Because obviously we want spiritually healthy volunteers. None of us are perfect. All of us are growing. We're all struggling with things. So I'm not saying, you know, you have to have it all together before you serve. But we do want to set people up to serve in healthy ways because obviously their spiritual health is going to be poured out on all the people that they're serving with and the people that they're serving.
And you really can't underestimate the power of serving with friends. When I'm invited to do something with someone that I already know, I could be doing just about anything if I'm having fun with people I care about and people I know. And so that's where if you leverage people who are already serving in your area and they're inviting people they know, they get to serve together and create an experience together and have a lot of fun doing it.
And I think the flip side of that is also we've probably all seen the situations where because a certain combination of people are serving together, it becomes toxic. And so, yes, it can be extremely uplifting, and I love it when people come together and serve as friends. I mean, those are some of the most fun. One of my favorite memories in recent years is jumping into a van full of women that was loaded down with water on a insanely hot day and driving around and finding random people who were outside and giving them water bottles and having very brief conversations with them. It was a blast. I mean, I think we had more fun than anybody who got water that day. Well, of course, we were in the air-conditioned van. That could be part of that. But at the same time, I've seen situations where, you know, you get that one person in a group who is unhappy mostly with life, but it comes off as being unhappy with ministry or the church or whatever, and little by little people seem to catch that virus. And, I mean, if we're not paying attention as leaders and we let that go for very long, it can really infect a group of people. So, again, being aware of what's going on and who people are serving with and whether or not it's kind of spiraling upward or spiraling downward, because we obviously want to put a stop to that spiraling downward effect.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I wanted to mention about these banner announcements, I have been in situations where I heard those and they really sounded like they really sounded desperate, and to me the unspoken message is, this is a terrible job and we haven't been able to get anybody to do it, but if you would please sign up, we really need you to help. And it sounds to me, Melissa, like the strategy that you've done with your team would include a sermon that would be vision casting, not hole filling, not, you know, please dig us out of this pit. Am I reading you right on that?
Nobody wants to join a sinking ship. And guilt is rarely an effective motivator. And so, yes, when we do church-wide initiatives where we emphasize volunteerism, we try to explain to people how God has created us to contribute to his kingdom. And we cast visions for what the church could look like if every person would employ their gifts on behalf of Jesus and what he's doing in our community. There's a lot of big picture vision for the church at large, but also specifically for ministry areas that we've developed. You know, why do we have such a heavy emphasis on kids and on students? You know, why do we have guest services, and why do we try to make a great first impression with people who are coming through our doors for the very first time? We try to explain to people what God is doing and try to help them grasp how they can play a role in it. It's rarely out of desperation that we're doing these things. It's because we're trying to help people both be fulfilled by how God is using them and help the church to grow. So, yes, I would very much shy away from any type of guilt type of announcement or teaching and really focus on the why and the vision.
Perfect.
I also think that if we find ourselves as church leaders repeatedly giving those types of messages and those types of pleas, we need to look at the bigger issues that we may be having. I mean, if we're in a smaller church and we're constantly having to beg people to serve, we need to look at, are people already serving and they're maxed out? So we're trying to keep these programs going and not really considering the people that we have to run the programs as well as the people that we're trying to reach. Are we trying to just put people in holes and keep these programs going, as opposed to, are we really being wise stewards of the people that we have? Are we keeping them refreshed? Are we equipping them and investing them? And I think that can especially happen in smaller churches and even mid-sized churches. You can continually add so much that you really do not have the people force in order to get everything done that needs to get done.
Susan's absolutely right, and I think that's a problem that plagues churches of all sizes, where we have great vision and we bite off more than we can chew, and it's just asking too much of our people to get it all done. And there are times in churches of all sizes that we have programs that have existed for a long time, and they might not align with our vision, and they might not be giving back a great return on investment, but yet we keep doing it because we've always done it. And sometimes one of the best things that you can do for volunteers is to give a specific ministry a pause for a season and recalibrate it or consider retiring it, so that you have enough volunteers and enough momentum and energy. And really, all your ministries are aligned with the vision, and therefore you're making the most of the volunteers you have.
Well, we have a guest who has called in, and I don't know if this guest intended to call in so that they could ask a question or not. Are you? We don't have a way to screen callers here, so I will just ask this guest from area code 334 if they have a question for our two interview guests this morning. I guess not. That's fine. Let's go forward then. This has been a rich discussion about recruiting. I want to talk a little bit about, I want to talk maybe the rest of our time about then how to keep our volunteers. When we planned that September issue that in which Melissa and Susan wrote, the contributing editors recommended to me Patrick Lencioni's book, Three Signs of a Miserable Job, A Fable for Managers, and suggested that these three signs of a miserable job, these three ways to make employees miserable in their work, also have great application to how we deal with our volunteers. And so we asked Melissa to write about that, and she did a great job of it in this September issue. And I thought we would use that outline as a discussion with both of you about the task of keeping our volunteers and keeping them fulfilled. So the first one, the first sign of a bad manager and a miserable job is anonymity. And the article said, many excellent volunteers leave their ministry positions because they see little evidence they're known and cared for by their ministry leader. They leak through a metaphorical hole called anonymity. And I'm wondering if either of you can resonate with this to the extent that you can tell us a story about having seen this happen, either in your own experience or maybe you've heard it from some other ministry leaders. Does this ring a bell with either one of you? They fell through a metaphorical hole called anonymity because they just didn't see that they were known or cared for. What do you think?
I once spoke with a children's ministry volunteer from another church who was telling me about their volunteer experience at their church. And they served very faithfully every Sunday. Oftentimes they were called for last-minute needs by their ministry leader. And because of stage of life and some circumstances in their life, they needed a reprieve. They needed a break. And so they tried to talk to their ministry leader a couple times about the things going on in their life and tried to express that the type of schedule that they were keeping and the amount that they were serving was just way above and beyond what they could feasibly handle and do a good job. And every time that ministry leader convinced them to stay and convinced them to keep doing what they were doing. And eventually that person that would have otherwise been willing to step back and take a smaller role or to do something different for a season, they had to quit because they felt like they weren't being heard and that their ministry leader really didn't care about what was going on in their life as much as they cared about getting the holes filled. And I think that ministry leader unintentionally was employing guilt because they were under such pressure to keep the program running that they really forgot that this is a person that God had entrusted to them and somebody who needed some coaching and some guidance and some care that the ministry leader just chose not to or was unable to provide. And so I think that's just a great example of like not feeling known. There are times when I think volunteers can feel like I'm just a cog in the system and you don't really know me or care about me. And when that is the case, you're usually setting them up to need to quit before too long.
Do you have any reflection on this point, Susan? And if not, that's fine.
No, I would just agree with Melissa. I think that so many times it's, it is the ministry leader's responsibility, but at the same time, I think they do have so many responsibilities and sometimes needs to turn the other way for their own sanity. And then we lose people and we almost blame the people that we've lost because we think, oh, how insensitive of them. They've walked out on us. But in almost every case, not all the time, but in almost every case, I think there were definite warning signs that we could have noticed. And maybe they would still have left, but we could have let them leave with grace, and when we don't do that, every time someone leaves because of anonymity, they're less likely to come back. And I think that's really the sadness in the whole thing, because when we equip them to lead well or leave well and really maintain their own dignity and maintain that relationship with them, and so they don't have the guilt about it, they're much more likely to either come back to that ministry or try another ministry, which I think is essential.
Well,
you know,
and really...
People agree to a role. They agree to a role or they agree to a commitment, and then they don't show up. And that's a great example of a time when if they don't hear from their ministry leader that they were missed, they assume that they're not important. You know, for one reason or another, it didn't get on their calendar, or they forgot, or maybe they're irresponsible. Chances are they're busy or something happened in their life and they didn't show up. If they don't hear from us saying, hey, where were you? We missed you. We actually need you to come and let us know if you're not going to be there. If there's not some sort of coaching and guidance, if they signed up for something, didn't come, and they don't ever hear from us again, their natural assumption is, you don't need me. And so that's a way that sometimes people fall into that hole of anonymity where, you know, I'm not known, nobody missed me, so, you know, why should I take this type of role seriously?
Yeah,
and
that relationship.
Another side of that is when people actually do show up, but they're not needed, they're not used. And so, and I think this, I've seen it happen several times, especially with younger parents who, busy lives, busy season, and yet they feel this need to go help with a church parking lot or a building project or whatever, but they show up and they're not plugged in, or they stand around for an hour before anything is actually done, and they feel like their time was wasted. And so they end up walking away from that feeling, well, I was unseen, I was unused, and I've got things at my own house to do. I've got my own family to care for. I'll just do that next Saturday instead. And so I think that we have to make sure that we are ready for our volunteers, that we communicate with them before, during, and after their time of service, whether that's a one-time thing or it's ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that to avoid this feeling of anonymity is really just a matter of intent. It's not a huge task for the recruiter to simply say hello, to ask, is there anything you need, to check in. Sort of like the manager at the restaurant who comes around and says, was everything okay? That feels a little forced in those cases. But if I've been recruited to a job and I know that the recruiter is there in the building, but that he or she never speaks to me, never stops and says hello, never smiles, never notices, that's a big demotivator. And yet to do that is not a huge job. It's just a matter of intent. I would guess that each of you, when you're in your recruiting roles, is spending a lot of time at the job, especially if it's a building-based project. You're spending a lot of time just saying hello and checking in with the volunteers who are serving there.
I think sometimes you can actually put somebody in those bigger projects that are ongoing. We think so much about the tasks that need to be accomplished, but we need to also realize there's a lot of relationships to be built. And you can actually have people in that role. Their complete role is to encourage and walk around and greet and see what people, they're almost like runners. And they just end up making as many connections as they can, because so many people are focused on tasks and they need to be focused on tasks, but yet, you know, you can't ask task people to be people and vice versa, especially when you're in the middle of a big project. And so look around and see who's really gifted at encouraging people and connecting with people, and ask them to come to one of those really busy events that you know is mostly going to be task focused. And their role is simply to smile, walk around, grab a water for someone, connect with that person that they see meandering off by themselves, or someone who's gotten a phone call that seems really preoccupied. Well, you don't know what kind of phone call that they just got. And it may be seen as aloofness when in reality it's a high ministry need right then, that they need somebody to stop, ask them how their life is and to pray with them right then and there. And it was a blessing that they were in the middle of that environment at the time. But if no one notices those things going on, we really lose important ministry opportunities.
Okay. And I think a principle that you're alluding to here that you've alluded to several times is that we're not using the volunteers. We're ministering to the volunteers. We're partners together in this task that God has called us to do here. But a large part of my task as a recruiter is to minister to these volunteers, not just to find people to get a job done that I need to have done. And that's a big difference. It takes a lot of energy from the recruiter, doesn't it?
It definitely does. It does, but again, if the recruiter is saying yes to the right yeses and no to the right no's, then it flows better. There are still issues, there are still struggles, but when it becomes less about, like Melissa said, less about managing and more about leading, that relationship building and noticing the details, noticing people, it comes a little bit more naturally because that is more of your focus than a program where you are basically filling in a sheet of 10 volunteers for job A and 3 volunteers for job B and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's the big challenge. Melissa, you mentioned a book in your article, Simply Strategic Volunteers, Empowering People for Ministry, and highly recommended it. I don't know if there's more for you to say than just to recommend it or not, but why might that be a book we'd put on our shelves? Simply Strategic Volunteers, Empowering People for Ministry by Tim Stevens and Tony Morgan. What can you tell us about that book in a minute here?
I really can't recommend that book highly enough for those of us who lead volunteers. The way the book is set up, it has very short chapters, and it's all pragmatic. It's not theory. Some of it's vision, but it's actually stuff that you can implement this Sunday or this week. It's packed with ideas of how to move things forward in your volunteer structure and your volunteer culture. We actually require that book to be read by all of our staff when they come on board, regardless of what role they play, because we really want people to be leaders of leaders and leaders of volunteers. It's just part of our culture. But we also hand that book to our high-level volunteer leaders who are responsible for guiding other volunteers, because it's just part of the way that we have trained people to think volunteers and to do ministry through volunteers. So it's a great primer for those of us who are getting started, but I imagine those of us who have been doing it for a while would also find just nuggets of wisdom and ways to take it up a notch if you're looking to take the next step in developing your volunteer culture.
And you make a good point, and that is that virtually every staff minister is a recruiter of other people to help in ministry. Wouldn't you say that's true, or am I overstating it?
I think churches that are in the healthiest place they can possibly be have the mentality, we are here to empower the saints, and that anything that can be done by volunteers should be done by volunteers. It saves personnel dollars for the church, and obviously there are some things that have to stay at a staff level, but anything that can be given away, if we can give away ministry, if we can give away wins, if we can empower people to impact other people's lives person on person, we want to do that. And so I think churches that have found a really great balance are being very fruitful in the kingdom and have found a way to employ the use of volunteers and to equip them to do ministry.
Yeah, good point. Very good point. Well, let's move to the second point. We've got there were 3 points that were discussed in this book. The second one is irrelevance. Whether the task is big or small, volunteers must grasp how their contribution fits into the mission of your church and ultimately how it adds value to others. Actually, you've spoken about that already, Melissa, but and both of you have. It occurs to me that as I think about volunteering, volunteer recruiting that I've seen happen, that it's easy to recruit people who will help me because they want to help me. I need them to help me get a job done. Oh, you know, Sally, I'm in charge of this clothing drive, and it's such a huge job. I've only got 2 people, and I need 4 more. Would you help me out? That is a pretty shallow way to approach this. Wouldn't you agree, even though you said that people who know each other working together can be good? Wouldn't you advise recruiters to take a little bit higher plane than that? Either one of you can respond to that. Maybe you think what I just said is a good way to approach volunteers.
Actually, I believe any type of recruiting that's done because you enjoy a person, care about a person, or believe in a person is probably going to be short-lived. I think the purpose of long-term volunteer fulfillment, it has to be connected to mission and what God's doing in the world. And so I'm a firm believer that no matter what volunteer role you're recruiting people for, there has to be a why that is greater than, I know the person who's in charge of this. So, for example, if you've got somebody who is gifted at landscaping and helps weed the exterior of your building, they're not just weeding because they're good at weeding. It's because there are guests who hopefully are going to drive up to your church, and they're going to decide within the first few minutes whether or not they're going to come back. And so if your entire campus communicates, we have prepared a place for you, we value you, we want this to be a great experience for you, if it communicates the seriousness of which you take your ministry, your outward appearance of your building matters. And so to recruit somebody to do landscaping without explaining to them why you want them to do landscaping, it's not just about the building looking good. It's about making sure that everybody feels welcome here and they know that we prepared a place for them. I think that there's room for that kind of explanation in any role actually worth doing in a church.
What's your reaction to all this, Susan?
Yeah, I think that sometimes people do simply jump in because they know someone. But it's the role of that leader, that point person, to have a continual conversation about that bigger vision, as Melissa said. It's while you're pulling the weeds and you're planting the flowers, saying little comments such as, isn't it going to be great when people pull up and they see the care that we've taken? Isn't it fun to really work together and make sure that we're creating a good first impression? Isn't it fun to work together as we take care of the property that God has entrusted us with for this season? Just that everyday conversation, seeing the big picture, that way when that key person leaves or something has changed in that person's life, they've really passed the baton well, and other people have picked it up, even though they may say while that person is still there, oh, I would never take the lead, I'm only doing this because you're involved. But in the long run, as you plant and foster those seeds, people really do catch that vision. And we have to do that over and over and over again. I mean, we all know that. We all know that vision leaks. We all know that just because somebody has heard something one time doesn't mean that they're going to catch on and carry the torch forever. But we've got to live that out in everyday ministry reality, especially when we're talking with our volunteers.
Very good. Well, one of the things that Lencioni says in his book is that the leader should be the chief reminding officer. And that's exactly what you're just now describing, Susan, and Melissa, too. We're constantly reminding people of why we're doing this. It's about the mission. It's not about helping me get this job done that I got saddled with at the church. Or it's not about letting you do what you enjoy doing, but doing it at the church. You love to sing? Well, boy, you can sing in our choir. You love to arrange flowers? Man, we need some flower arrangers. Those might be starting points for finding a person, but it's about more than that. And Lencioni also suggests tell stories. And I don't know if that piece of advice resonates with either one of you to flesh out for those listening to this podcast or not. Tell stories and be chief reminding officer. Does that resonate with you, one of you gals?
Well, what you celebrate gets repeated. And so when your volunteer culture is working right, people are naturally mining for stories, hearing stories, and really connecting what volunteers are doing with how the church is growing and how people's lives are being changed. One of the very practical ways that we try to tell stories is by identifying a volunteer of the week. And I think churches of all sizes could take a few minutes and just identify somebody who's doing something right in your church and spotlight them. The way that we do it is we snap their picture. It's not complicated. We snap their picture. Their ministry leader writes about three sentences regarding how that person is excelling or how they're living out our code, which is at Westside, it's the way that we live out our mission, one of our key values or principles. But the ministry leader will write a few sentences about why this person is an amazing volunteer and how God's using them. They'll explain the role that they do in one sentence. And in so doing, we affirm the person who's doing something right. And then we cast vision to other people about how God might be able to use them in that same ministry area. So we'll post that Volunteer of the Week photo and that short summary on social media. On Facebook, you can actually tag that person so other people in their circle suddenly become aware that they attend your church and that they're a valuable contributor to your church. But it also just plants seeds of what it means to be a successful volunteer and inspires other people who are looking on and watching. So, you know, just simple things like recognizing people who are doing well and announcing that. You could do that same thing if you don't do social media. You could do that same thing on a church bulletin board, or you could do that same thing by hanging posters or flyers in key parts of your building. Just finding a way to identify people who are doing it well and doing it for the right reasons, and then letting other people know about it.
I think stories are absolutely essential, and people really relate to them because they're narrative. We all have stories. We all relate to the emotions that are involved in stories, the encouragement. And I think, too, as the chief reminding officer, we have to remember to be authentic. So by reminding people, we're not just going down a checklist of these are the great things we need to be doing, this is the vision. You know, it's not a checklist. It's really about doing real life together, because that's what the church is. We're the body of Christ, which means that we're going to be bruised at times. We're going to have a broken bone that doesn't work well at times. And I think it's equally as important to share some of those stories, share some of the discouragements that ended up being a great teaching possibility, something that really spurred someone on to grow. Maybe there was conflict, but the conflict got resolved. And so, not that you want to put that out there all the time, but I think that it's important that we teach some of those positive outcomes of some potentially negative things and how we wrestle through them. I remember one morning, this has been several years ago, I travel a lot, and I'd gotten in really late on a Saturday night. And quite frankly, when I got up on Sunday morning, I didn't want to go to church, which is really rare for me because I enjoy going to church. But I kind of wanted to just stay in bed and eat like Cheetos all day long or something and watch some, you know, I just wanted to binge watch TV all day long. And I ended up, because I had to get up and brush my teeth and that kind of thing, I got up and kind of on automatic pilot, I ended up at church. And when I pulled in, I was still a little bit disgruntled about being there. And the first person I saw in the parking lot was someone that I tend to need to encourage. It's just someone who is not an encourager and kind of soaks up encouragement. And she, with very flat affect, said my name, asked me how I was, and I put on this smile, and I said, great, and I just kind of went on, and I thought, okay, that was so fake. And I said, could you ask me that question again? And I think she thought that I was losing my mind. But she asked me again, and I said, okay, here's what actually happened this morning. And I told her some of the story, and I wanted to stay in bed and eat Cheetos all day. And she looked at me, and her smile just got bigger and bigger and bigger as I was telling her the story. And she said, you're just like me. And I realized that sometimes when we just try to encourage people, even out of a, we think that's what they need. But in reality, they want to hear our struggles as well, because they want to know that we're not always excited about going to serve. Sometimes we are volunteering in a capacity where we're frustrated. We're not sure why we're doing it, or we're just doing it out of obligation. And that may not be all the time. I hope it's not all the time. But I think it's important enough to be able to relate to people so that they don't think that if they're not the shining star volunteer, they can't volunteer. We have to make sure that we let them volunteer through their doubts and their weaknesses and their questions.
You know, Mark, I think a lot of our listeners today probably lead volunteers and are trying to think of ways to tell stories. And one of the most effective ways for you to tell stories just comes very naturally by sharing compliments or sharing stories. When you behind the scenes hear of somebody who is impacted by a volunteer, making sure that volunteer gets that story or hears that story. For example, if you have a children's ministry, we have a children's ministry that tries to go the extra mile for new families. There was a family who walked through our doors one day with a special needs child, was very concerned about leaving them in a room, and we had a volunteer show them to the room but decided to stay with that child the entire service just to make sure that mom felt comfortable. Well, that's definitely going the extra mile. And our staff heard that story later, but that volunteer didn't necessarily hear how important that moment was for that new family. And that's when they decided that this was going to be their church home. And so for us to circle back and make sure that we tell that volunteer what a huge role they played in the transformation of that family and their connection to our church is hugely important. And sometimes we can get so busy that we never circle back to people and tell them the compliments they're receiving behind the scenes or show them how what they're doing is making a difference. But whenever you see how a volunteer has impacted a person and has impacted their transformation or their connection process, if you just remind them of the difference that they're making, it just fuels their fire.
And once again, that is very...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's mission-oriented. It's not me-oriented. It wasn't, man, I don't know what I'd have done if you hadn't helped me out Sunday. It's, look what you did and how that's contributing to what we're trying to accomplish here. And I think that's a point you've been making that's very key. Go ahead. Now, Susan, what would you make?
That circling back is so essential. I think in ministry we can get so focused on forward movement. We can wrap up things on Sunday or Wednesday or whatever kind of our weekly cycle is, and we just start catapulting into the next week. And I do a lot of sewing, and so I kind of think of it as, you know, I can just power forward in a basic running stitch, which is just up, down, up, down, up, down, but always forward. But the stronger stitch is looping back, and you're still constantly moving forward, but you're kind of going back and catching that thread every single time you move forward. And we need to really be intentional about part of our weekly schedule is that reflection on what just happened and how that helps us move forward, whether it's a lesson that we need to correct and grow from, or it's the encouragement and feedback that we need to give to someone specific, or it's a pause. It's something that we really need to spend more time reflecting on because we're not sure what just happened. But we don't want to get stuck in the past, but we want to realize that God uses that as we are moving forward to really strengthen us and equip us, which in turn strengthens and encourages and equips our volunteers.
Very good. Well, let's talk quickly about this, the last of these three points, which was measurement, gauging the success of your volunteers. As leaders, we must determine what success looks like and inspire volunteers to get after it. And this leads me to a couple of specific questions for you ladies. One of them relates to the whole job description idea and how far you can really take this for the number of volunteers that you may need and perhaps the sort of menial nature of some of what some of them are doing. They're cutting grass, they're making coffee each week, they're serving as an usher. He's saying we must determine what success looks like and inspire volunteers to get after it and measure whether or not they're succeeding in that. How far can we really push this with volunteers and the wide range of tasks that need to be performed? It's one thing for somebody who's directing children's choir, maybe. It's another thing maybe for the person who's weeding the flower beds or making the coffee or being an usher. I have a hunch that you see it all the same, either one of you, but I'd like to have you respond to that question. You want to go first, Melissa?
Well,
go ahead.
I think that ministry leaders sometimes have to get creative in helping people gauge whether or not they are successful. And it might not be intuitive or obvious at first, but in Lencioni's book, he talks about the guy that works in the window of the drive-through fast food restaurant. And so how does somebody who's giving out food out of a window, how do they gauge their success? And he, in his fable, explains how the manager told that young guy who was working in the window of the fast food restaurant, the way that you can gauge success is how many people can you make smile during your shift? Mm-hmm. Now, that is very creative. That took some thought. But really, if he's trying to build relationships and a great experience in that window in 30 seconds or less, that's a great way for him to gauge whether or not he's making someone's day and making sure that their experience in that environment was really fun or brought a smile to their face. So the number of smiles. We actually do that same thing in our children's ministry. How many kids can we get to smile in the hour that they're here? Now, of course, we're telling them about Jesus, but we want this to be the best hour of their week, and we know a lot of our kids walk through the doors really burdened by life and things going on in their family and their school. And so, you know, behind the scenes, even though we are teaching lessons, our kind of secret goal is to make kids smile. For greeters, mm-hmm. it might be, how many names can you get to know? If people are walking through the doors, it happens really fast. How many people can you recognize as they come through the doors and begin to call by name? If there's something that's very tangible and measurable, it gives them something to work for that is really more specific and perhaps more motivating than just stand here and shake hands. You know, if we're trying to create a culture where people are known and have a lot of joy and this is a place where they feel like they are welcomed, let's make sure that you're stationed at the same door every time you serve and then see how many people you can recognize and then how many people's names you can get to know over the course of the time that you serve. So, I mean, there are just creative ways that you can develop to try to help people figure out how is my job meaningful and how do I tell if I am doing a good job.
I love it. Susan, anything
that's
to
so
jump
important.
In on here?
Yes, just that, you know, so many times when we do think of evaluation, and evaluation is critical because it really does give us that feedback of what's working, what's not, what I can personally improve, what the ministry needs to improve. And I love Melissa's point that you do have to get creative, that evaluation is not always pen and paper. It's not always nickels and noses. You know, it's not something that we can tangibly measure, but we still want to make sure that our volunteers, because we're casting a vision and we're giving them that value in ministry, we want to not just judge them by a job description or by a task list, but give them those real tangibles of how do I know that I'm doing an okay job? How do I know that I'm really putting 100% into this? Well, sometimes in children's ministry, you can put 150% into it, and that one child is still going to scream bloody murder the whole time. But that doesn't mean, you know, maybe they looked at you with a little bit quizzical look and they paused just for a second, and you'll take that as a success. Maybe they're starting to recognize you just a little bit more. So are there ways that we can encourage people to look for those small signs of growth, that they recognized one extra person that they didn't know the week before? Now, they may have forgotten three names, but, you know, we'll take what we can get at times. And just that evaluation is not always pen and paper. It's not always something we can file away or put on an Excel spreadsheet, but we can still be measuring that on an ongoing basis.
And there's something about this that relates to how you recruit them and what you tell them about the job when they're considering taking it, isn't there? Here's what we expect you to do. Here's what has to happen for this job to be successful. But it's difficult to do that with every single job, isn't it?
I think it's difficult to formally do it. But I think you can informally do it. And to me, it's not just what we expect from the volunteer, but it's also what the volunteer can expect from us. So as
right.
a leader, as a church, as a ministry staff, whatever kind of that, however big you want to get, it's, here are the things that we expect from you. We need to know if you're not going to show up. We expect you to be prompt. We expect you to be responsible. We expect you to cut the grass without us having to call you, whatever those are. But at the same time, to be able to say, but we're here to support you. So if something comes up last minute, don't feel afraid to call us. You know, we are not some big, bad person who is just going to come down on you and think that you're a failure if something comes up in your life. So it's really communicating both ways. This is a partnership. It's a relationship. Ministry is never solo. You are always relating to other people. And if we ever make people feel like they're out there on their own just completing a task list, we are setting those people up for failure. And worse yet, we're not really portraying the body of Christ as he intends.
Yeah. Mark, I think it's easy to listen to a phone call like this or go to a conference or read a book and feel like there are so many things I'm not doing. And this is just a huge, daunting task. And I would just encourage listeners to figure out the one thing that needs to be your next step. Like, only do one thing you want to get better at. And one of the benefits of sticking with volunteer development and recruiting and leadership, being a person who utilizes volunteer as well, is that you start to reap dividends over the long haul if you just keep at it. So if you get one area that we've talked about today right and you get that under control, it might take you 6 months or a year to get really good at it. And then you can move on to something else. And I just encourage people not to get discouraged, because there are so many aspects of leading volunteers well and developing a healthy volunteer culture. It's just one step at a time.
Well, that is a wonderful, wonderful way to wrap up this program. And to me, this whole discussion has been very encouraging because it's been so practical. But that's a great way to end the discussion. It's going to reap dividends for you in the long haul if you just keep at it. Take one thing that you need to do better and start working on it now. And in 1 month or 6 months, when you feel more satisfied about that, then you can move to another goal. That's a great way to end this discussion. Before we sign off, we want to remind readers that we do another Beyond the Standard program almost every month. And if you go to the website where you're listening to this now, you can look through our long list of previous programs. And I think you'll be sure to find a topic that will help your ministry or a podcast to share with other leaders at your church. So I encourage you to do that. Now, let me tell you about next month's program. It's already been scheduled. It's Tuesday, October 20th at 4 p.m. It's a different time than we usually do these, but I think that will be a good time for many of you, Tuesday, October 20th at 4 p.m. It takes off on that month's issue, whose theme in October is integrity. And that month, we are featuring an article by Eddie Lowen, who, by the way, is senior minister at the church where Melissa is serving. Eddie talks about how he, with three others, Ben Kacharis, Tim Harlow, and Greg Nettle, have participated in an accountability group that has existed among the four of them for more than a decade. He tells how they got started, why they're doing it, how it has helped them remain true to their own goals and their own standards of personal integrity and their own relationship with God. And we've succeeded in finding a time when all four of these ministers can join us to talk about that experience. I think it will be another rich discussion. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope many of our listeners will tune in. And I want to remind you to download the free Christian Standard app today for your phone or tablet. And in addition to a bunch of free content there, you'll see how easy and inexpensive it is to receive the elegant digital editions of Christian Standard every month. Be sure to read the September issue with all of our help for volunteers, and we have a lot more help than what we've even alluded to in our discussion today. And the October issue, just released, as I mentioned, helps each of us pursue integrity with passion and purpose. It's got so much rich content there for you to think about. And so that'll be all for this broadcast. We're very grateful to Susan Lawrence and Melissa Sandel for giving us their time. And we're very grateful to each listener and reader who makes the ministry of Christian Standard possible. So until the next time, we'll say to each of you, goodbye, and God bless you.